like to call to order the Wednesday, March 7th, 2018 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Hill?
Here.
Director Nichols?
Here.
Chair Austin?
Here. You all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're now at agenda review. So is there anybody want any changes in the agenda?
Not I.
I note yet again that the audit is not on the agenda this evening. Other than that, I'm okay with the agendas presented.
Okay. That'll bring us to public comment. So anybody would like to address the board? Items that are not on the agenda, come forward.
I would like to comment on the John Wallace case that was recently heard in Santa Maria. The case was settled with two no-contest pleas and a restitution of almost $60,000. There was no dispute of the facts the DA brought to court, with the judge saying, here you have a grand jury report. They seem to figure it out. The judge even questioned the need for witnesses since the facts were so clearly laid out. The defense had only a statute of limitations defense, which the judge thought was significant. During testimony, the district's former counsel stated that he disagreed with the 2011 grand jury report and that the district had mitigated any appearance of conflict of interest by board and attorney vigilance. The judge also stated that the entities didn't want restitution. I'd like to know who determined and why it was determined that the district didn't want restitution. I request that the board pursue it. Our rates have increased because of the depletion of reserves during the Wallace years. I'd also like to remind the board that if the board had been vigilant, they would not have delayed so long after the 2011 grand jury report and the 2016 Knutson report. The delay undermined the case and allowed a significant statute of limitation defense, the only defense that John Wallace had. It's not that he hadn't done anything wrong, but it was just legally too late to prosecute him. I again urge the board to take your governance responsibilities seriously. When you as a board aren't vigilant and don't provide adequate oversight, you put the taxpayers' money at risk. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and the only thing I would say about the Wallace matter, and I've said it many times before, when Mr. Wallace left the employ of this district, he had charged you to return your records, nearly $20,000, to return your own property. That is extortion, and that has its a different connotation to it. But I would like to see you look at the ruling, look at the facts of the case, and from only the newspaper accounts, it sounds to me like the judge felt that this was a civil matter. And if this is a civil matter, then this is up to you to pick up the ball and run with it, in that you need to seek civil restitution. I also would like to say something that I've said before, and that I would ask that your board rescind the censure of Mayor Hill. I would ask that your board investigate Mayor Scholes in his role in meddling in personnel matters. And I would also ask again that you consider a community conversation to expand your board.
Any other public comment?
Shirley Gibson Halcyon. My only comment is, what would it cost to pursue the Wallace issue again? Seems like it's going over and over the same issue. Probably not worth it. Thank you.
Good evening, Mary Lucia Sciano. I would like to ask you to kind of maybe do a presentation on the last rate increase that the people of the district voted on or was pushed upon, because my understanding is that there was a large amount of those resources to be used for reclamation. And so I'm not quite sure that your budget has reflected any reclamation work, and so I'm a little concerned in that area. As far as Wallace case goes, the way I took the judge is, why was that case there? It didn't appear to be a criminal case, and the district hadn't brought criminal charges against it. The people of Oceano, Arroyo Grande, and Grover Beach spent over $70,000 on a Knudsen report that people were pressured into by Debbie Peterson, who was running for the mayor of Grover Beach at the time. And Miss Julie Tacky had pushed for that Knudsen report. And so that cost the ratepayers well over $70,000, not to mention the legal costs that went right along with that, which I can't even begin to guesstimate. So at what point does the board, you know, and the organization move on? You know, we're talking about 7-10 years. Come on, give it a rest. You know, the district, you know, doesn't need to put any more of our money into that. So I really strongly encourage you to start looking forward and not continually looking behind. Hindsight's a great thing. So as far as the personnel issues and the accusations that Mr. Scholes had spoke to an employee, Mr. Hill speaks to the employees, has breakfast with the employees all the time. So, you know, Mr. Scholes isn't on this board anymore. Mrs. Wallace is. So, you know, if you want to make strong language and policy around that, then include it in the policies and procedures. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of pursuing something when two people aren't even here anymore? So just please move forward. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I might briefly respond to that.
I'm going to finish public comment first, please. Go ahead.
Colleen Kubel, I just want to say that what will we gain if we further ran into this? There has been so much taken from the ratepayers, not this board, not from anybody else. It's the ratepayers that are paying for what he did. And so are we to just sit back and let it go and let the ratepayers be the losers? Or are we going to fight for what's right? The right and wrong is what's here. Even though it went through the court, everything else, there is still civil litigation that can happen. And that's what needs to happen. Thank you very much.
Ron Arnson, I'd like to speak to the John Wallace case also. I'm going to read from the Cal Coast News. Attorney Mike Size, a friend of John Wallace, who worked at the Sanitation District as legal counsel while he was also employed with Wallace's private firm, testified that the Sanitation District Board of Directors knew of Wallace's conflict of interest but continued to allow Wallace to funnel government funds, government contracts to his firm. Wow. Is that a conflict of interest? Did we have an idiot lawyer that should have stopped this whole thing? Mr. Seitz should have been in the middle of this. He should have said, you know, every government entity that I know asks for 2 contracts minimum on a bid every time something goes on, a bid on a contract every time something goes out. I know at the state we have probably 3 minimum. You just don't hand a contract to someone. Mr. Seitz is the guy that really should be under the gun here. I won't go on to it, but he really screwed you guys, and hope it felt good. Anyway, and as far as cost to this district, a couple of idiots brought forward a long ongoing investigation of one of the members that cost $50,000 to this district and to the community of Aurora Grandy. Those idiots don't get, nobody says anything about their wonderful contributions to things, do they?
Anyone else?
Patricia Price. I have a few things. I'll talk for a moment about the Wallace thing. I would like to know who said we did not want reparation, first of all, who okayed the not asking for that. Second of all, if he pled guilty and it's a civil case and we have any recourse to go after him, I think we should, because I don't think we should let this pass. The man is guilty. He admitted to guilt. I say let's have him pay some reparations. He cost us a lot of money. He cost us millions. We're not going to get that back, I don't imagine, but we should be able to get a substantial amount back. We just need to go in and show where he caused losses. I think that a real healing would occur in this district with the people who have been watching this as ratepayers from the audience and around the community if the censure for Jim Hill was rescinded. I think it was unfair. I know that John Scholes did. I know that he did the things that the mayor was accused of, and I don't think it was ever proven that he actually did. Let's see. I would like to know why Wendy Stockton was at the different hearings for John Wallace. I want to know if we were paying her to be at those hearings, and if we were, why. I wanted to know on the agenda this week, why were the items that Mayor Hill requested, why weren't they on? Why isn't that brought up before the public so there can be a discussion about them? I do not think that it shows any kind of integrity when two members of the board vote down a member of the board who wants valid things brought up on the agenda to be discussed in front of the public. If you take him down every time, the public doesn't get a chance to have a discussion about it, to listen to a discussion. I again want to say I really would like all of the applications for the administrator to be brought before all of the board members. I would like to be assured that that is going to happen. That is happening. All applications reviewed. I saw on the staff report that, again, there's been no training done for staff. And I was concerned about the staff. Fannie Mae quit. Fannie Mae quit. I don't know why. So we've got what I count as four people that actually are qualified to work on the grounds, and the rest is administrative, and that's way over four. I'm counting maybe eight.
Right, thank you.
Administrative staff.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, I'm going to close public comment and bring us to the consent agenda. So we have the approval of the warrants and the approval of the minutes of February 21st, 2018. So is there anything that anybody want to hold on to consent?
Madam Chair, I note a couple items on here. One is a bill from Wendy Stockton as legal counsel for February 2018 of over $6,000. And I understand Ms. Stockton resigned from the district's employ before that. So I'm concerned that we're getting a bill that appears to be after that Ms. Stockton left the service of the district. I also note that Mr. Karp for Professional Services Engineering for the last half of January and early February has a bill of almost $20,000, which represents about 34 hours a week at $150 an hour, which seems quite a lot for what we're receiving. But I'd certainly like to understand why Ms. Stockton's billing us at this point.
No, I do not.
Already been asked. Then can we get a motion to public comment, please?
Julie Tackerin, I'm sorry, are we just doing the warrants right now?
I think you didn't want to pull the warrants, but you just had comments, right?
Just comments. So the warrants and the minutes are being approved right now?
Yes.
Okay. So I, too, am concerned about the Paul Karp bill. One of the things that I've noticed about Mr. Karp's invoices is that they are not itemized, and I think in light of the excessive cost, you need to know what he's up to, what he's billing for. So you should ask that those bills be itemized. I was at the clerk's office yesterday and shared this Form 700 of Wendy Stockton's with the mayor. I was at the Board of Supervisors for the Los Osos item, and call me crazy, but sometimes I hang out in the clerk's office and go on their computer, and you can read all the 700 you want, and Wendy's shows a leaving office statement of January 27th of this year, and there is a $6,000 invoice for February in this warrant packet. So that's a valid question. I hope your legal counsel will answer it. With regard to the minutes, I just wanted to speak briefly to the format. We're back to bare bones, and you guys have not agendized a discussion about how you want your minutes to really look. I know some of you voiced the action only, others have had some other expansion, a yay or nay on each topic, but these are pretty skeletal. The difference in the Mayor Hill and the Mayor Scholes issues are Mayor Scholes admits that he met with staff, and that is part of why I continue to ask, and it's reflected in these minutes, for an investigation into him. Something that I've noticed not in the minutes, because it's not happening at your meetings, is we're not seeing cash reports any longer, and I think those are important to bring forward, especially since you haven't had an audit. Last thing, the very last item on the agenda, last thing in board members' communications, item 8, page 4 of 5B, Director Hill requested that the board agendize for the next meeting a discussion to contact Jim Erb, San Luis Obispo County Auditor Controller, and pursue the offer to provide audit assistance. He also requested that the board agendize a discussion on expanding to a 5-member board. Then there's this line that comes from somebody on staff. It says, the entire board did not provide direction to place an item on the agenda. Well, it doesn't take the entire board to put something on the agenda. Once it's on the agenda, then you can vote whether or not to follow through with the item. But to get it on the agenda, item 4.1 of your bylaws says, any director may call the district administrator and request an item to be placed on the regular agenda no later than 5 p.m., 11 calendar days prior to the meeting date. Such a request must also be submitted in writing. That's all he had to do. Doesn't need you to vote and approve that something gets on the agenda. Okay. You are equals. Each of you can ask for something to be on the agenda, and it should be there.
Thank you. Anyone else? Comment on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment to the consent agenda. And
I move that we accept the warrants and the minutes as reported with notation of the questions.
Madam Chair, if we can exclude the Stockton bill from the motion, I would support it. But with a bill from someone who's left service of the district well before the billing started, I have issues with that.
Can you answer that? Is this a bill for the January and that just has the wrong day here, February?
Good evening, Madam Chair and board members. In regards to Wendy Stockton's bill, she did resign effective January 1st. She does have an ethical obligation, as all attorneys do, not to leave their clients dangling in the wind. She has continued to serve the district to close out projects, especially help out with the consultants on vacation. I suspect that you'll have one more bill from her, and after there will be no billing for March, but you will probably see a February or March bill from her, but not anything after March.
Okay. So she's officially resigned, but she has been filling in and helping out.
She has an ethical obligation to not leave us without support.
Okay. Madam Chair, I respect the ethics of attorney-client relationships, but at the same time, it was pointed out that the Form 700, which is required of people in service such as legal counsel, has to continue for the period of employment. And as long as we're making compensation at this rate, I would say that the employment is apparently continuing. So I don't know that what we're doing here is as clear and transparent as it could be.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to approve the consent agenda. So I will second the motion to approve the consent agenda. So could we have a roll call, please, on the consent agenda?
Director Hill?
Respectfully, no.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Chair Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries 2-1.
All right, thank you. Okay, our next item is we're going to do the technical consultant's report before we get on to the discussion of the policy manual. So on the technical consultant and plant operators report, is there a staff report on this?
At the last meeting, there were some questions that I was unable to answer, so I've asked Michael Jones to attend. We appreciate moving this item up to the beginning of the meeting so that he can leave after he presents his report and answers any questions you may have.
Okay, Michael, you would like to present the report, please?
Last week, I know there was a question about chlorine usage on the plant operations report, last meeting. There was a chlorine usage of 25 pounds. That was just a data entry error. We have corrected that. It should have been 250. And not 25. And I believe there was also a question about not having the notice of violation on our staff report. I have put that on this board meeting's staff report. And that essentially was just caused by we had shut down our ferric station. We were having some construction done in our headworks. Our bar screen had failed, our washer compactor. So we had to shut down our Grit King. And with that, we had to shut down our ferric pump station. And with our digester number 2, it reacts a lot quicker than our normal primary digester. So the RH2S within the gas in that digester went above our limit. Operation staff reacted very quick to mitigate the exceedance, and we had it back to normal within, I'd say, about 5 hours. We're within our limits, and then we've been within our limits since. I don't think there was any more questions on that. I just want to just go on our current report, staff report. Operations staff has been pretty busy. Got a lot going on. I know this Friday we have some bids, bid opening this Friday on our digester project. That involves the digester rehab project and also our valve project, valve replacement project, excuse me. And then on the trainings, we have them scheduled. We do them on like about twice a month. It was on last report that we did some training, but it should be on the next report as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have public comment. Is there public comment on the plant operator's report?
Julie Tacker, and I'll start with Mr. Jones' section. I'm glad you're here because it's nice to have questions answered. With regard to the notice of violation from the Air Pollution Control District, it says a fine has not been assessed. Does that mean that there won't be one, or are we just waiting till they process the paperwork and that there will be one? I'm interested to know. I am aware about your lab technician resigning. Curious about the rehiring process and how quickly that can be done. And what's happening in the meantime, I know that when the brine trucks deliver, there's a sampling that needs to be done. How is that getting done if you don't have somebody that's certified to do that? And then my questions with regard to the technical consultants, I have a question I asked before related to the Cambria Community Services District brine disposal application. It says it is staff's intent to process the application as usual. Again, I would ask the board to ask your administrators to bring that application to the board for your approval. I think it's a controversial project and the public has the right to weigh in on it. With regard to the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, whatever its new name is, it says here, and this is the first time I've seen this, I knew that one was in preparation. Now it says that a memorandum of understanding for the district to consider has been created. So at some point that memo's coming to your board. I know your board never talked about it before they started to work on it. And that's troublesome to me. Lastly, the financial initiative and the, now it looks like the audit won't come to your board until April. I think I'd like to know if you can go to the recommendation by Mayor Hill at your last board meeting and that you do contact Jim Erb at the county assessor's office to see if that can be expedited or if he can do the job, because it doesn't seem to be getting done. Oh, one more thing. With regard to the federal funds that you are seeking for the redundancy project, on page 2 of the report, it says that you may be eligible for grants and loans for up to 1/3 of the amount needed for the redundancy project through the disadvantaged community program. 1/3, Oceano is disadvantaged, and they are not 1/3 of the project's users. So I'm curious about the 1/3 number, and I would suspect that we're really talking about 18%, maybe 20% of the financing that might be eligible, but not one third. And I'd like someone to look that in, look into that.
Is there any, excuse me. Anyone else have public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back. Is there any comment from the board on that?
I want to thank Mr. Jones for the report. I know the operators are working diligently at the plant and doing a good job for the ratepayers. I'm a bit relieved to hear that the 25 pounds of chlorine was a misprint. I note that on this report we have a low of 63 and a high of 452, and it looks like if we're going from 25 to 563 to 450, that indicates to me that we have an unstable process, and that would be troubling. And I'm hoping that our process is in fact stable, and I'm confident that the operators are working hard to manage that and make it happen.
Okay, Barbara,
No, I really don't have anything on it. Okay. I do appreciate having Mr. Jones here.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Jones, for being here. And, so we'll just receive and file that report. And it'll bring us to 6B, discussion of personnel policy manual updates. Continue discussion on the draft revision of the personal policy manual that was started at the last meeting. So did you have any, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And to recap from the last meeting, the board has gone through the item up to section 2030. So you would start your review at 2030 this evening. There were a number of comments made that we have jotted down but have not incorporated into the document. The only direction we've received is to correct grammatical and other non-substantive errors in the report. Amy and I are keeping a track of that. We'll continue to keep that track tonight. And with that, you'd have to determine how far you want to go tonight.
We'll do an hour like we did last time, I believe.
Very good.
I think we'll stick it to an hour the most. So, who wants to start? Do you have notes?
Madam Chair, to bring us up to speed on where we started at the last, or left off at the last meeting, we were talking about nepotism policy, and I commented that this was a pretty draconian policy and appeared to be very sloppy, and I have a copy of the nepotism policy from the state of California Department of State Hospitals, their latest personnel policy on the subject. It's two-thirds of a page on one page and two-thirds of a page on another. So with a page and a half, the state of California can state their policy where it takes our district people who've been involved with this, largely I would suggest Gerhard Huebner was involved with it, 2, 4, 6 full pages of stuff that largely seems overreaching and ill-advised. And I would suggest that a far more streamlined policy in line with what the state has as their policy would be better advised for the district. It's pretty clear to me that no one thought about looking at other jurisdictions' policies before engaging in this very costly effort that's resulted in what I deem to be an unsatisfactory document. So I guess we could start with the 2030 section.
Okay. I was under the impression that we had finished the 2006 section.
Yes, we wanted to just come up to speed with where we are.
So the break in service part, right?
Yes.
I had that marked as having been reviewed.
We left off at the end of 2020 at the last meeting.
Okay, my mistake. I have not seen anything other than throughout the draft, there seems to be a tendency to sometimes use full-time employees and sometimes use regular employees. And I would like to see that resolved so they use one or the other, because it becomes confusing.
Yes, the inconsistent use of terminology is common here.
That's it occurs in other areas in the 2000 series, but now that we brought it up, it right at the first page of 2030, it's in two different places.
I'm looking down here at the bottom where it says previous full-time employees who were laid off or retired and rehired as part-time employees will have their employment service records maintained. Then it gives the policy for part-time employees.
Right, so I can understand the distinction between full-time and part-time, but which is regular and which is not. Either not use the term regular or use the term full-time, part-time. I don't know how that is phrased in the definitions, because I haven't gone back to the definitions.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with Board Member Nichols, because the term regular, I don't recall seeing a definition of that anywhere,
so
whereas
you wanted to say
full-time and part-time are terms that are defined and understandable under our policy, or proposed policy, but I agree with my fellow board member that the term regular is irregular.
Okay, well so they crossed that out and made it full-time. So is there other so any other place where we see regular, we need to change to either full-time or part-time, right?
Yes.
So, excuse me, as Amy has just brought to my attention, there is two definitions, one for a full-time employee and one for a regular employee.
Hmm.
And that is 2004 and 6.
So then are we using two different definitions to apply to the same employees?
I think what we're trying to say is a full-time, a regular employee, or why would there be a separation of a regular, full-time, and part-time? It would be three.
Yeah, the distinction between full-time employee and regular employee is a regular employee has already passed probation. A full-time employee has not passed probation. So I would.
Then we also need part-time employee and hourly employee as separate categories. Is that correct?
They are defined separately.
Complicates matters.
Okay, so. On the outside employment, is there anything that anyone sees there that they'd like to?
The top of page 2030, number one, right under break in service, paragraph one, paragraph two, the first sentence in paragraph two says, until one of the follow occurs.
One of the following occurs.
One of the following occurs.
Right.
Then I have a question on our philosophy, and that goes into paragraph 4. I note that 2020-1, where somebody submits an application to the district from wherever they may submit an application for employment, that our policy there states that we'll retain the applications for a period of 3 years. For this would be an initial applicant with no prior experience with the district. We're going to retain those for 3 years. And then I see that our employees who've been with the district for some period of time, but would be laid off perhaps for lack of work or not related to performance issues, remain on the reemployment list for 1 year. And I wonder why we're discriminating against our employees who are facing layoff or effectively demotion to a lower level position that may be open, and only would consider their reinstatement for 1 year when we retain unsolicited applications for 3 years. Seems to me probably the reverse of what we would want to do.
See the 3 years.
I'm sorry, excuse me. I'm trying to locate Director Hill where the three-year language is. It would help if we identify it by page number and then by section number.
Okay, that is on
that is on 2030, because I found where the employee may remain on the reemployment list for 1 year at the discretion of the district administrator, remain on the list for one additional year. On this break in.
So that's that's on page 2020-1 in the first paragraph under employment appointments.
Okay.
It says the district shall retain all employment applications and related materials for a period of 3 years. Presumably so that they could be referenced and acted upon within that period of time. And that's why I note the contrast to our existing employees who are again faced with layoff or...
So you're saying they'll keep applications of someone who was not hired longer than they'll keep a list of, for an employee for...
That seems to me to be...
I think that's just...
unusual.
Is there a law about keeping applications for 3 years? And then what he's saying is that, you know, we'll keep applications for 3 years of people not hired, but then on for the somebody to get reemployed as a result of a layoff or something, they keep it for 1 year. That's his question. So what?
So 3 years is the statute of limitations to bring an action against the district. So if an employee or if a prospective applicant felt that they were mistreated or discriminated against, that would explain why there's a 3 year retention period. Once the statute of limitation runs, then there's no reason to keep those.
But also those individuals who had applied could be offered employment in that 3 year period while the district maintained their files.
Are you talking about an eligibility list? Because there's a distinction between keeping an open list of candidates who are successful and pass the initial screening versus...
I don't see that distinction drawn anywhere here.
I'm not sure that I see how one bears on the other.
Yeah, I... If I could comment, I really don't think these are substantive changes. I don't think it really is something that would have a significant impact if you were to go one way or the other. You know, my recommendation would be to leave it as is unless you have a serious problem with it and move on. You can always bring this back and address it in the future if you would like to continue to review this and revise it.
Okay, thank you.
I can live with that suggestion.
I think we can move on with that. So we're now at the 2040 outside employment. Is that where we're at next, Jim?
That's the next section, yes.
Okay. Anything on there that you see?
Just a typo.
Where's that, Barbara?
In item 4, page 1, there's an or that doesn't seem to fit. An employee who does have approved or outside employment shall not be permitted to use district records.
I agree that that or appears to be misplaced or should be deleted.
Employee who does not have approved outside employment shall not be permitted to use the district records materials. That's the way it should read. Okay, so we'll move on to 2050, separation.
It says an employee's approved outside employment, this is the next to the last, it's item 3, shall keep the district administrator current as to their status with said additional or outside employment. Additional, I'm not sure the term additional there, additional or again. I would think they would keep the administrator informed as to their status with said,
their status outside, the outside,
said
employment.
Outside employment.
Take that with said additional or outside, just have shall keep the district administrator current as to their status.
Keep the administrator informed.
Informed of their status in the outside employment.
Again, is that housekeeping or is that?
It's a housekeeping, I would say, not to change, is it?
To change.
It's just words that are extra, I think. I think an employee who has approved outside employment shall keep the district administrator informed as to the status of the outside employment. Something like that. Is there a reason that said additional is in there? Does it? Some legal reason? It's just...
No, there's no legal reason. It's just a matter of syntax.
Okay. Okay. All right. So we'll move on to 2050, resignation. I don't see anything here for this section.
Third paragraph under number 1, resignation, is a little clumsy if we're looking at...
The one that's underlined, separation?
Parallel construction, yes, the one that's underlined. It says, occur by retirement, release from probation, termination of employment for cause, I would say unavailability for work, because otherwise it's if the employee is not available, which doesn't really fit in the grammar there.
But it's not really substantive in changing.
It's not a substantive change. It's some grammatical change.
Grammatical unavailability for work. It's just shortening it up, making it
fewer words.
Without approved leave when they've been employees down.
Yeah. staffs. Let's see. Lack of work because the necessity for a regularly allocated 30-hour, that's a part-time position as we've defined it, or full-time position no longer exists. I don't understand. We seem to have covered the definitions in 2020, paragraph 4, paragraph 6, paragraph 7, but not paragraph 5, which is hourly. Would hourly people who work something other than 30 hours but not 40 hours, maybe they work 29 and a half or 30 and a half hours, so they're not defined as part-time, they're defined as hourly, but this doesn't address that situation.
Well, I think it includes hourly. Anyone who is regularly allocated 30 hours because of necessity.
So a regularly allocated 30-hour position is what we define as quote-unquote part-time.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly 30 hours, so it's not 29 and a half, it's not 30 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly 30. Or a full-time position, but we also provide for hourly people who work something other than exactly 30 or exactly 40 hours.
So you say,
but there's no provision for layoff in that instance, as I read this. It's a term that we've defined, an hourly employee.
So is there a problem here with if it was somebody that was, you talk about a part-time employee less than 30 hours is not specified on this? Is that what you're saying? We need to go for...
Well, we've defined hourly employee, and an individual appointed to an allocated position. An allocated position in the district service scheduled to work less than 30 hours per week on a temporary or seasonal basis, which is designated by hourly compensation on the regular salary schedule, that class of person is not addressed in this policy as I look at it.
Perhaps they're not subject to layoff.
Well, that's my question. Would if that seasonal work finished early or was not necessary during
maybe
a particular
because of
year?
Layoffs, they were, these people are regular employees, so they would be subject to layoff, or temporary would, it wouldn't be as like an official layoff. They would just, these are more.
Now, it would assist me if I guess Director Hill, you can ask me what question you would like answered, and I'll do the best I can to answer it. I'm not really following the significance of the difference, other than part-time employees usually do not have layoff procedures. You can just let them go at any time, and employees who have more vested rights usually are entitled to some type of protection from layoffs.
That clarifies the issue for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that includes those who are in a allocated district position.
But that says less than 30 hours.
Less than 30 hours. Okay.
Okay. Anything else on that, on the layoffs? Period equivalent to? I didn't see.
Nothing that I've seen.
Number 2, paragraph C, an employee affected by layoff may have retreat, known as bumping rights. Next sentence, for the purpose of this section, seniority includes all periods equivalent to full-time service at or above the retreat position. Does that include the 30-hour personnel? Would that be prorated to equivalents to full-time service?
Which paragraph is it you're referring
C
to?
C under layoffs.
Number 2C on page 2050-1.
Oh, one. Okay.
So if a 30-hour position works 4 weeks, that's 120 hours. Is that equivalent to 3 weeks at full-time service? Also 120 hours?
Is that a question you have?
That's my question.
Okay, on number two, on layoffs C.
So seniority includes all periods equivalent to.
So that is to capture the employees who may work 20 hours 1 week and be required to work 30 the next. So when you have equivalent to full-time service, I think you. I'm not understanding the significance of why
equivalent to full-time service. Yeah. That's why that word, all periods equivalent.
I mean, just talking about bumping rights. I think it's, to my mind, it's clear. I understand exactly what they're talking about.
Okay. Well,
if you want to provide hypotheticals, I'll do the best
rights.
I can.
What I don't understand is what we mean by equivalent to full-time service.
Well, like you said, they work 1 week, 20.
Well, my specific question was our part-time, which is the 30-hour person. If they work 4 weeks, that's 30 times 4 is 120, right? Is that equivalent to 3 weeks of full-time or not?
Yeah, I'm not sure I could answer that question. I really don't follow it. I'm sorry. What's the concern, and maybe I can address it that way?
Is this intended to apply only to full-time persons or to part-time persons as well?
Yes, this is a layoff policy, so it absolutely applies to full-time persons, and it absolutely applies to part-time as defined in here, so that if you have part-time employees working 30 hours or a full-time position, you always take seniority, so you're going to look at the person and see who fits within those definitions. It's very difficult for me to try to address hypotheticals this evening with all these possibilities. It's really when the situation factually occurs in the workplace, it's not that complicated to figure out who gets laid off and who doesn't, as long as you have a policy written down.
Thank you. So let's go on.
No, I guess that at the risk of potentially a hypothetical, if we have two part-time people working 30 hours, it says seniority includes all periods equivalent to full-time service. So does that, again, is...
Are you saying if they both have that time?
Yeah, is 4 weeks at 30 hours equivalent to 3 weeks at 40 hours?
What does that have to do with seniority?
Well, it's whether you
I think
get the retreat position or not, which I would think could be very important to an employee.
Well, I think, like you say, that's a hypothetical thing that would happen, and you've got this procedure here, and that's what you go from. We can't.
How would you implement the procedure?
We can't decide tonight, we can't have all the, what if this guy did that, we can't do that. We have to have what we have in place, which I think, I understand it. So, I mean, I know you're trying to, that's something that may not come, I mean, it's something that will be dealt with at the time.
I don't think any document can cover exactly every single a thing that might arise in employer-employee relations. Much as we would like to try and have a rule for everything, I doubt that that's possible.
Well, clearly we're not trying to do that here.
Next is, do you have any
205.
No, I don't have anything
layoffs.
Else on the...
Is there anything more on the layoffs?
Paragraph H on 2050-2. Whoever was hired last, if they were hired for the same effective date, I think hired on, which they replaced with for, is a better choice. I don't think that correction is accurate.
They were hired, yeah, it should be on, and for should be taken off.
I agree with
if
that.
They were hired last, if they were hired on the same effective date.
I agree with that.
Okay, that's H on 205. I've got it. Okay, anything else? On?
Let's see. Just room there, for which the person possesses the minimum qualifications. We added in including current required certifications and licenses. That should be.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, Director Hill, but can you direct me to what paragraph you're on? Because sometimes
sorry,
you start reading on the middle of a sentence or the paragraph, and I can't follow.
Okay, I'm generally proceeding in order through it, but I'm on page 2050, number 2, and this is paragraph I.
The last.
Third one from the bottom. So it says, for which the person possesses the minimum qualifications. Then it starts to detail some of the minimum qualifications, including current required certifications and licenses. That just seems superfluous.
Well, they added that for, I don't know if that was, maybe with the union wanted that in there.
certain things, you get a certification, and others you get a license. There is a distinction between the two documents.
And I agree with that, and I would suggest that in either case, it's part of the minimum qualification.
Okay. Is there anything else on that? We can move on to 3,000. Hours of work and overtime.
No comment on that part.
Pardon me?
No comment on that
part.
No
comment on the hours of work and overtime.
Nope.
It's 3,000.
No, I didn't find anything on hours of work and overtime. Yeah, number 5, page 1, hours of work and overtime, number 5, there A has been excised, so we have to renumber the, or re-identify.
Renumber the, make the, B would be the, A, and
yeah.
D would be B.
Yes.
C is E,
and C would
so
be F.
D is C, and E is D.
Got it.
And F is E.
Okay. Did you get that one?
Yes. Just to be clear, Amy and I are attempting to determine when there's unanimous agreement on the board.
Oh, okay.
So I'm writing okay right next to these changes, and then when there's specific comments made, for example, on the last one, I didn't change anything other than note that Director Hill had a concern or question on that right language on the licenses and certifications, and that's how Amy and I are proceeding.
Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Good.
So for the record, I would concur that those paragraphs need to be renumbered appropriately.
Okay, standby policy and pay, page 30101.
In paragraph 1, it says maintenance employees. I don't believe we have a classification of maintenance employee at this time.
Do Would that be something? I just leave that as utility employees and not say maintenance?
Well, this is the original wording, utility and maintenance.
Well, that is correct. It is the original wording. Maintenance responsibilities are going to be defined within the various job descriptions. So this isn't meant to be to designate a position as maintenance employee. It'd be any position that has those maintenance responsibilities would be entitled to be called out on these on weekends, on call.
Well, at one point we did have designated a maintenance employee, which we no longer...
At some point, so I don't see any point in eliminating the word.
Okay, let's go on then. We'll leave that as it is. I don't see any need to change that.
One...
Okay, 3010 number one, standby... this is paragraph 4. Standby duty shall be compensated at the rate of defined by current compensation agreement or MOU.
Take off of. Take over.
That, I think, does make a substantive difference in the meaning of the paragraph.
Okay, anything else on that page? Okay, on page 3020, pay periods.
3020, nothing for me.
Okay, we'll go on to 3030, page 1, compensation. Anybody see anything they want to talk about?
I only have typos.
What are those?
Marked on those. And number A, on page 2, A, performance. There's too big a space there. It's just...
Okay, it's on the second, 3030, number 2.
It's strictly cosmetic.
Yeah, so once we bring this document back at the end process,
right.
So Amy will be sure to format it correctly and check for those things.
I didn't see anything, Jim.
No.
You ready to go on to page 3 of 3030?
I don't have anything on there either.
On the 3031 certificate pay?
The only question I have on that is for the first time in the document, wastewater plant or wastewater is added to plant in paragraph 3. And it's that designation is used very sparingly, but specifically in a number of locations. Is there a reason to do that just once in a while?
No reason.
No reason.
I'm
okay.
Sure the person who added that
then
was
again,
trying to make it read
consistent.
Smoothly.
Okay. Move on.
I have a question about the 3031 number 3.
Okay.
That made sense when we had a lab technician operator where a person who had for example, a grade 3 operator certificate and was also certified as a lab technician would receive a 3% increase, presumably above the operator level for performance as the lab technician after experience and so forth. but why would a lab technician, if we take away the slash operator there, why would a lab technician receive a 3% increase for designation and performance as a lab technician? I don't understand.
As you can tell, this section was the original language. Mm-hmm. So there's been no change other than a couple wordsmithing by the author. The 3% increase is just a decision that was made by a previous board. It can be any number that the board feels appropriate, although I would just recommend leaving it as the status quo.
Well, again, that made sense to me when we had a combination, a person with qualification not only as an operator, but as a lab technician. So that operator is going to receive a 3% increase because they're also functioning as the lab technician. That makes sense to me. But if we take away the operator, which was kind of the basis for that 3%, so now you've got a lab technician functioning as a lab technician, why would there be a 3% increase for that?
Because they've been successful for the first 6 months.
After 6 months, they get a 3% increase.
And
after 6 months' experience and after recommendation by the superintendent and approval by the district administrator, saying the lab technician classification shall receive a 3% increase for designation and performance as the district's laboratory technician after 6 months' experience in that position. So I don't think there's a differentiation between operator. I think it's just saying, I think that's why they took operator out, because they're just saying the lab technician will get a 3% increase after 6 months' experience.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Amy has brought to my attention that that was a lab technician in real life. This is why this language was in here. A lab technician had received a FOG inspection certification. Performed the FOG. So apparently that's the origin of this 3%.
That's interesting, but that's not clarified in here either.
Well, it would seem to me that obviously we're not expecting to have an operator also perform as a lab technician.
Oh, we've had that actually for several years until the resignation of Ms. Moy. Now we have none.
So I guess... So you want it to say lab technician operate. You don't want the operator removed. You want it to say operator classifications.
That makes sense to me. Otherwise, if someone could explain the basis for it, then I would understand.
What does that make any difference in how they look at it?
Because certificate pay is basically something over and above what your job requirement is. So, for example, operators are eligible for 2.5%. So if a grade 2 operator is required for the position, and you have a grade 3 operator filling that position, that person gets a 2.5% base pay increase. It's got a qualification over and above the requirement. And for a commercial driver's license, that's not normally required. It's something over and above. So we pay a stipend of $100 per month for someone who has a commercial driver's license. Now we talk about a lab technician, limited only to a lab technician, receiving 3% for being a lab technician. And I don't understand how that works in respect to certificate pay.
I think you're trying to make more out of it than it is. That's probably... The operator is covered in another section, I would think. I think you're trying to make it. I don't see.
Well,
unless the technicians have, the technical administrators have another viewpoint of it, it's all right with me.
This is something that would change the, what the, you know, the reason it was taken out, was there a reason in that would cause problems with having to go back through all the union and everybody?
Right, I think it was for clarity, and just to be clear, paragraph 3 only had two recommended changes by staff, and that was to delete operator and add wastewater, which really aren't significant changes.
Okay, well then I'm fine with that, even that the way it is.
Okay.
The out of class pay 3032, page 1. This is all new.
All new.
So,
again, there's just a typo in number 7, but and instead of and. So we don't want to worry about that one.
Jim, do you have any?
That's on item 7 with the written approval of the district administrator and employee.
Yes.
That was the one you were mentioning.
Yeah. Yes.
It should be the employee.
No,
an employee.
Yeah. No, an employee. I gotcha. An employee may volunteer to perform duties of. Right. Okay.
But again, that's not substantive.
Accepting and providing gifts, 3040, page 1.
Very clear to me.
Yeah, I think that's. Anything you see, Jim? So, with that, we'll move on. 3050, page 1, performance evaluations. Apply to all full-time and part-time. I think this is all pretty. Good with the performance evaluation section.
Mm-hmm.
4000, page 1, vacation. Probationary employees and all classifications.
I wonder if we've reached our hour at this point.
Are you ready to call it an hour? Whenever you want to do that. It would be at 7:30.
By all means, let's go another 10 minutes.
We'll do public comment, yes. So did you have any?
Are we going to
do? We're going to do vacation.
Okay.
And we'll end it.
Yeah, I do have one on that. I'm not sure. Page 1, paragraph 2, all employees in the competitive service. What does that mean?
I have no idea what that means. It is original language from the original policy.
This just means in the.
Is there a class of employees that are not qualified for vacation pay, or is that what it means? Or just.
Well, I think it's
confusing. But you're right. It is in the original, and I guess we need to leave it alone.
I would suggest that that just because it's in the original document doesn't make it correct.
Do you want to take that? All employees shall be entitled to annual vacation leave with pay except the following. If you don't think that word means
again,
it sounds if confusing to you. Or
I think it is confusing. I don't understand what the competitive service is either.
I don't see any reason why it can't say all employees shall be entitled to annual vacation leave with pay except the following. Is that, I think that would be fine, don't you?
Is that a substantive change?
Yeah. It's taking out some words. It's not really changing.
Right.
And competitive services is just a...
something no one understands.
Right.
That's
just
correct.
Means in the
I've never heard
of
that
the
term
work,
before.
And they just, somebody threw that word in.
All I'd caution is that we wouldn't want to expand it to all employees who may be an employee but aren't entitled to vacation, such as part-time employees. So I think we need to be very careful in wordsmithing that. We can look at it and come back with
can
recommendations.
Can you look at it and see?
Yeah, good
that
idea.
Would look good. Okay, so we all agree that. Check out why that says that. If there's a
yeah, well, we have enumerated exceptions, A and B.
Right. Anything else? Pay on the vacation, anything else?
I thought I had one, but I found it myself.
And again, you will be going through for all the, you know, if we miss typos or grammar. They will be checking for those, but. So if we're all good with the vacation pay up to 405.1. Do you want to do holidays? Or do you think you want to, I think we've already.
Oh, wait a minute. Page 2, 4,000.
Okay.
The number 6, the first paragraph, 240 hours is struck and 280 hours is added. In number 12, it's just 240 hours. Is there a conflict there? Or is it there? Are they two different sections?
My page doesn't have the strike. Does yours have the strike of the two?
It does. Well, in paragraph 6, there's 240 is on a strikeout.
Yeah, it wasn't on my copy. It just says 240. Is it 240?
And then it doesn't say 280 yet?
Excuse me, Madam
so
Chair.
So we want it to be 240 or 2?
This isn't a question of being consistent at picking one or the other because they're both different. The first one is the maximum accumulation of vacation time, and that could really be any amount that you choose. I'm not sure why it was increased by a week, but it was in the recommendations by staff. The that's in paragraph 6.
Oh, okay.
It could be any number you'd want to cap vacation limits at.
But on termination, they wanted to leave it at 240. Okay, that makes sense.
So at termination, an employee would only be able to cash out up to 240.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So we're going to have to leave it at 280 and 240 down here.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay. Okay. Back on to administrative management or management leave.
I see nothing wrong or confusing.
Okay, with it, Director. Okay, you want to be able to call it good at this point? We'll open it to. Yeah, let's. We're going to stop here for tonight, and we'll open it up to public comment.
Hi, Colleen Kuhl. I want to digress a little bit down to what
Director Hill started with is the nepotism policy, and I have had extensive experience with this, and I took the liberty of taking excerpts from the county nepotism policy, and I edited it to fit the Sand District. So I'd just like to pass that out to you just as an example. I don't expect anything out of it, but this covers almost everything, many things that the other one doesn't have, and it's only one page, okay? And so, and the second thing is, I'm amazed sitting here listening to all the changes that need to be made and everything else, and I'm amazed that council is so eager to let there be gray areas when this is the important thing to keep us out of court. And so my that's the only thing that I would fear. And because you want to have this as clear as you can, out of experience, and yes, you can't cover everything, but you can cover darn well a lot of it. And so, and I would think that you would want to be err on the side of too much than not enough or leaving something gray. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Colleen.
Okay, so we'll keep with that with our... Yes, go ahead.
Julie Tacker, and I too would ask that you maybe revisit the whole nepotism policy. It looks like you've got two examples from other entities. I think it just would be healthy to look at some other examples. I've forgotten the date, but when Mr. Huebner was here and they were talking about delving into the policies and procedures manual, I asked through the Public Record Act for a copy, and I was sent a October 2015 version. Within it is an adoption of 2010 of the document. So there's the idea that this is hasn't been looked at or refreshed since 2005, as your staff report says, is simply wrong. And what I'm concerned about is that changes may have been made in the 2015 document that are not here because you've gone maybe too far back and lost portions that were added sometime in the years since. And so that's just one concern that I have. This last one that you just touched on, the management leave, why would you change it to management leave from administrative leave? I think everyone is familiar with administrative leave. I've never heard of management leave, so that's just a question in my mind. And then I would direct you back, I think this is significant, to page 3030 under compensation. Any chance you're going to follow me back there? 3030, item 1B, second half of the paragraph. The chair of the board of directors shall make the decision to hire any employee at step D or higher and would only do so after reviewing recommendations made by the district administrator with respect to the employee's experience and value to the district. Chair of the Board of Directors shall make the decision to hire any employee. No way. No way. The chair doesn't get a say. Not one of you gets a say in who gets hired and at what step. The only say you have in anything is your district administrator and your legal counsel. So I think this has to be changed.
Anyone else?
Okay.
Arnoldson. I'd like to touch on Mr. Hill and his approach to this. I think you have to realize that he writes documents for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They've got to be precise. The definitions have got to be precise. Grammatically, they've got to be good. They've got to be punctual. So I think we have to look at that when we see that Mr. Hill goes through these. Everything he goes through in this board, he goes through that way. And I think we need to appreciate that. This document was looked at by our HR people, by our legal counsel. They supposedly read it. Did they really read it? Did they go through it? Did they really analyze it? No, they charged you to do it, but they really didn't do crap. They sent it out to the union. The union signed off on it. Well, there's nothing negative to it to the union, so they're going to sign off of it. They didn't care what the grammar was or what the definitions were. One of the things that came to my mind last meeting was that when the legal counsel was asked about this, he said, this document is not perfect. If you want it to be, you can bring it back to us. It's going to cost you a lot of money. Isn't a job worth doing, doing well? Can you imagine buying a house and it's off kilter and you talk to the accountant, the contractor, and he says, yeah, it's leaning a little bit. If you want to bring it back to me, I can, you know, I'll fix it for you. It's going to cost you a bunch of money. Can you imagine going out from your surgery and you got a little bit of gut hanging out through your sutures and you say to your surgeon, doc, this doesn't look right. Ugh, it's not perfect, but bring it back. It'll cost you a lot of money. What kind of attitude is that? This council has cost us more money. They are not worth what they're costing us. You need to look at new council. Sorry about that, but that's the way I feel. You are the board of directors, and you are the people that give not only the administrator of this this facility their direction, but the council. You can take direction, you can take their advice, but you need to do your own homework, and you need to make decisions that are proper for your constituents, for your ratepayers. That's your responsibility. If you don't want to learn the job, if you don't want to find out what it's about, have someone on your boards be the representative here that will do that.
Mary, this is Yoshiano. Actually, I've enjoyed going through this policies and procedures and seeing the board dialogue on it. So thank you for doing that. There's a couple areas that I would ask you to consider is on 3040, accepting and providing gifts. The board of directors has been left completely out of that section, and I do think there needs to be some verbiage and language there, whether it be meals or gift cards or whatever. I don't think it's probably, I just think there needs to be some language in there that includes the directors as well. And then also on 4025, I'm not quite sure that's under F5, Christian Science Practitioners listed with the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston. I don't think that's the proper name of it. I think it's the Church of Christian Science in Boston. But I would double check on that.
I don't think we were at that.
4025.
We haven't gotten there yet.
We didn't get there, man.
Oh, that's under family leave and policies. Okay. Then there was one more, and I don't know where it would come into play, but and this isn't hypothetical. It actually happened to me as I had an employee who she had prayer four times a day, and so I had to make special accommodations for her to to be able to practice her faith, and so we did. We worked around it and changed her breaks and stuff like that. But I don't know where you would put that type of language, but at least to make some kind of accommodations for people who have special circumstances. Thank you.
Any other public comment?
May I make a comment on Mary's suggestion? Excuse me a minute, Patricia. Mary, when you were saying that the board needs to be in the gift section, the board has its own document here, the bylaws, and that's covered in there.
Go ahead.
Okay, I have a comment on the break in service. I was going through the other personnel policy manual we've been using, and on 2030, number two.
What was it, 2030,
number two, and I think it's like A, B, C, and D. They don't have the administrative leave, paid administrative leave in there, and that would be a break in service. And I was looking at the previous manual, which we're still under as far as I can see. Anyway, it says an employee may, where circumstances warrant, be placed on paid administrative leave, pending a hearing, so on and so forth. We had an employee put on paid administrative leave, and when she went back to work, it says, and this is, like I say, in the previous personnel policy manual, it says, a substitute employee is one who, at the request of the district administrator, fills any permanent position which remains continuously unfilled by its incumbent for 20 days or more.
Excuse me, Ms. Price, what page are you reading from?
Well, it's from a previous manual.
Oh, you're not, okay.
I was comparing it to what we've got in the new one here.
Okay.
And it says, let's see, due to the appointment of a substitute shall be terminated prior to the return of the incumbent. And I know that didn't happen. I know that Mario took your place, and he's still working. As far as I know, Amy's not back in her original place. And there are a bunch of other people doing the same job that Amy did on her own. So I was wondering, because this was the previous policy, why we're not at least following our previous policy until we get this dialed in. And I think something like that should be put in this one too. Because there's no, as far as I could find, there's no paid administrative leave in the new manual. And I agree that with Ron, that I've been amazed at how our legal doesn't know what to do with some of these things in here, and seems unfamiliar, because I've been hearing for months and months now that HR was taking care of this and legal was spending a lot of time putting this policy manual together. And I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing a reflection of the time that they supposedly put in.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we will close the public comment. And let's see. We will move on to...
Madam Chair, if I might comment briefly on page 3030, number one. I strongly agree with the commenter that the chair of the board of directors shall make the decision to hire any employee at step three or higher is completely inappropriate. chair of the board of directors, other than managing these meetings, has no authority over any of the other directors, and if the board might act as a unit, that might be something to consider. However, I would suggest that hiring employees is basically the responsibility of the administrator and not the board.
I'd agree.
What this is on 30.
Yeah.
Center of the page.
Oh, B. It says here the chair of the board of directors, this was in the old wording, shall make the decision to hire any employee. I've never seen the chair do that anywhere, really. So I would think it would be the administrator.
Something that the...
is there...
This is the existing language. At the risk of suggesting change to the existing language, I think that's something that needs to be changed.
Would you like me to comment?
Would you please comment?
Certainly. I believe you're misreading that paragraph because it gives the district administrator the authority to hire within the steps. Usually you have 5 steps, 7 steps. So the district administrator can hire A, B, or C. What this language provides for is that if a district administrator wants to hire someone at a higher step, D or E, that he would have to go to the chair, or she would have to go to the chair, and ask for permission or concurrence that this person deserves, because of their experience or education or training, deserves to be brought in at a higher level than he has authority to.
So that's what right does the chair have to make that decision?
It's completely within your discretion if you want to...
Or what did you make it the board?
You can give it to the district administrator and let him have the full authority to hire within the range and cut the chair out of the process. That's also
an option. I would suggest bringing it to the board of directors rather than the chair.
No, I'd recommend not that. That's a personnel issue, and you start politicizing employee actions when you bring them before a board.
I'm amazed at that comment.
Okay, so I think we're going to move on to the... Do we have any, let's see, we did a public written communications.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Written communications.
There's been no written communications.
And board member communications.
I have it if no one else does. I look at the agenda that we were presented with tonight, and I respect that council is filling in for the technical consultants, but the technical consultants have consistently not reported on district finances. We don't have an audit. I don't understand the issues of like legal counsel and so forth. It seems to me that there's a almost an unwritten policy to keep the public uninformed about what's going on here. And again, that doesn't reflect on legal counsel per se, but it certainly does reflect on the technical consultants in this case. Nowhere has this board been apprised of the resignation of our operator and laboratory technician, who is the only person on the staff that was qualified and certified to operate the lab. I found this out not from any communication from our district, but actually by way of the Cambria Community Services District, an email from Melissa Bland to Jerry Gruber. Hi, Jerry. At your request, I reached out to Fanny at the South San Luis Obispo County. As an FYI, Fanny mentioned that she's leaving the district effective Friday of this week. She wouldn't provide an alternate contact today, but I'm planning on checking back Friday to see who we should be reaching out to after her departure. That's not the level of communication that I expect from the staff, and especially our senior administrators, that I have to find out something by way of Cambria. And that's, it's especially concerning to me that Ms. Mui, who is a very well-respected lab operator, has been given awards by the California Water Environment Association and so forth for the quality of her work, and would be vitally involved in things such as brine deliveries that we're supposed to be sampling and analyzing. So now are we going to have brine trucks lined up in front of the plant being sampled, but nobody can run the samples because nobody's qualified to be a lab operator? If I had to characterize the performance of the technical consultants, I would use the term bunglers. They've bungled the job. When they came on staff, we had a chief plant operator who was a grade 5 certified operator. The technical consultants, while promising me that they would have things back to normal in a month, failed to do that. They bungled that job. They've laid off the chief plant operator, who again was our highest level of certified operator, apparently just based on innuendo that proved not to work out for our last administrator, another bungler. But audit, where's the people's money? They've bungled that one. We have about 7 people. It used to be we'd get financial reports. We had one person on the staff that was providing the information. One bookkeeper and person dealing with the finances. We got our reports on time. They were accurate as I checked them out. Now we have a bunch of people working on it, and they're bungling it. We don't have our audit. The bunglers are in charge. We have like 7 or 8 bookkeeper, administrator, blah, 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 in a district that now has 4 certified operators. So the bunglers outnumber the district's operating staff by 2 to 1. Bunglers.
Thank you.
That's what we have, and that needs to be turned around immediately. I want to know what we're doing to replace our lab technician operator such that we can do timely laboratory analysis legally. Why wasn't I informed by anyone at the district that this was coming on? I'm sure that that resignation, obviously it was known to Cambria sometime in advance. Must have been known at our district considerably in advance. Dismal. The public is kept out. Board members are uninformed. Bunglers.
Okay, we're going to move to closed session, and I'll ask for public comment on closed session.
I'd like to make a comment before.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Ron Arnelson. I've been coming to these meetings for over 3 years now, and totally agree with Mr. Hill's comments. When I came to these meetings, the grade 5 operator was acting as the administrator and the plant manager. The plant was running better than it's ran in the last 3 years. It had no personnel issues or matters going on. We were putting money in the bank, not taking it out. And every time there was an accountant of our money, we were gaining. The last two administrations, this part-time one we have now and the one before that, we're totally bunglers. I hope you can find someone to bring us, move us forward. Every time that the board has brought someone forward, Mr. Huebner, we thought, oh my God, here we go. We're going to get on the right track now. That guy was a total terrible administrator. He knew nothing about the sanitation plant. He was a water guy, not sewer water, not anything there, and he didn't have an idea how to administrate people. And I don't feel much better about the two people that are doing the temporary administration at this point either. As Mr. Hill says, the only person that was competent in the office is working for a grade whatever plant manager, or plant guy. I doubt that he even graduated. He probably has a GED. I don't know if he has and he's in charge of her. Makes a lot of sense.
Julie Tacker, and you're going to go into closed session. You're going to discuss the appointment of a new administrator. And I'm curious, and I wish we could know how many applications you've gotten so far, and when your interview process is going to begin, and if, and I've said this before, but I think the more interviews, the better. You do your own homework on these individuals, because the recruiting consultants that I've seen in the past, even in this district, that's how you got Mr. Huebner, you have the same consultant doing the work this time. Double check her work. You do your own research and make sure that you find a good fit for the district. It is concerning that you are now without an administrator, without a chief plant operator, and without a lab technician. That's very serious. So, good luck.
Patricia Price, I really don't like to be redundant, and I'm going to be. I agree with everything Julie and Bron said, and I would really like to see you interview all of the applicants, and don't take anybody until you get somebody who is really qualified. We had a disaster here. Huebner was a disaster. We in the public stood up time, meeting after meeting, saying, this is not working, this is not working. And 2-1 overrode the one person that also knew it wasn't working. And we're in a heck of a fix now. I ask you to lay down the gauntlet, get yourselves together, work together. This three board isn't working when two of you can knock down one person from bringing anything onto the agenda for the public to look at. I mean, we need to be informed. I'm not confident that I know we're not getting information. And I know that there's information that could be given about closed session that hasn't been given by our lawyer. He could be telling us more about what closed session was about and the outcome of it, and he's not. I know he's not. I mean, it can't just be no comment, no comment, no comment forever. I don't think he's ever commented until he was pushed one time by Julie for a vote on something that had happened. We can know that. I mean, there are things that we could be told, and I am tired of not being told. Let's get new legal. I don't trust our legal. I don't trust him anymore.
been on many interview boards, and you can sit, have a panel that can ask questions that have been given to them, but unless that panel knows what's going on, the intricate ins and outs of the agency that they're interviewing for, they don't even know when somebody's telling them or not. Whoever's on the panel board needs to understand how it works and ask the questions that really need to be answered in the correct manner. And it doesn't matter how you feel, anything else, if you don't have the knowledge, you shouldn't even be on the board, on the interview board. So you have to know about what you are asking questions about. And hopefully that will be done in the correct manner. Thank you.
Mary Lucia Sciano, I'm sorry you're having to go through this process again. I know that you all know that you can tap into other districts and other cities for people who interview for these positions all day long. What's disheartening is that I sat here and listened to Mr. Hilt give his full endorsement of Mr. Cart and Mr. Sweet when they were brought on as TAMP, and now they're bunglers, which reminds me of the President of the United States. Every time he wants to distract from the topic, he calls people names, you know, little man or whatever, you know. And so here we have a director, you know, slandering, calling everybody bunglers, which is so immature, it's unbelievable. But so I would really strongly encourage you to move forward. You have an application process out there. It's not perfect, but you're getting probably some good applicants. I'm hoping you're getting some good applicants. And when you do go into the interviewing process, stay on task. Don't get sidetracked. You know, that you inform them of the type of people that they're going to have to be listening to the second and third Wednesday of every month, because we're never going to get a good director if they don't know that there's a, you know, that we have a cheering squad that comes every week.
Be quiet back there, please, with this.
You know, that we have groups, sanitation groupies that won't let other people speak, you know, but they got to speak. You know, and so in order for this person to be very effective in running this plant, little plant, you know, that they have to know what comes with the baggage that comes with that plant. And I think that there will be plenty of people who will be able to take the whole crew on. Good luck.
Is there any other public comment? Not, we're going to adjourn to closed session.
If we could briefly respond to that, our audit situation is so bad that the county auditor controller has sent us letters indicating that if the bunglers don't get their act together, he's going to come in and put it together for them. It's not just my opinion, and I don't use the term lightly. And the issues also of discussing having Mr. Erb invited to assist with our audit is something that I hope the board would not be afraid to address. Similarly to the question of a 5-member board, seems to me an open discussion would be helpful and not something that should be feared by this board. But the term bunglers is quite apt in this situation. Thank you.
Barbara, do you have something?
I would like to end this meeting on a positive note. I think we have three people up here that are intelligent, that are willing to work together, and starting to put things in a positive framework instead of the negative that is pervading this room week after week after week. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Barbara.
Madam Chair, would you like me to make the closed session announcement?
Please.
The board will adjourn to a closed session to discuss public employee appointment, title, district administrator. Thank you.